Overview. In recognizing Jesus' words when he stated that the God of the Torah observant Jews was the devil, the spiritual Christians who were called Gnostics understood what was being implied when they said the God of the Jew was a lesser God who was a demiurge. Why a demiurge? Because they were literally controlled by their inherent carnal mindset, that is. The beliefs of the carnal Jews, which included all that they saw and understood, was interwoven through the filter of their doctrines in accord with the heathen vision of their God that they believed in. And Paul correctly warned that you can't be saved by the outward ritual works of the written word of the law, that the reader of the scriptures who failed to understand the allegorical manner they were composed in embraced what Paul portrayed as the letter that killeth. Peter called the written words of the scriptures the books that have the power to deceive. Why? Because the literal written word of the scriptures portrays the left hand of God, while the inner spiritual meaning that lies beneath the allegorical garb reveals the right hand that can sustain and save. The left hand is the reflective reality that is Lucifer, and this reflective reality is called the bringer of light, because the reflective reality is a corrective response to our actions in this world that is the fruit of our past words, thoughts, desires, and deeds that through confrontation forces an upward movement towards completion. Thus, the reality of the words with respect to the laws that, as you do unto others, the same will be returned unto yourself. The Old Testament has often been portrayed as the Mosaic law of retribution, that is, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And what is actually being conveyed is the law of action and reaction, often called the law of karma. When a child misbehaves, a parent applies a corrective action in accordance with the needs of the child. And in the scriptures, this great truth is revealed in the words, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap." Gal 6, 7 in KJ. Overview. The key of knowledge and the cosmology of mind. When the key of knowledge is properly applied to the scriptures, and they are turned within to unlock the inner and narrow straight gate that bestows entrance into the kingdom to the true seeker and disciple of the way, then the commandment at Genesis 1:28-2, "Be fruitful and multiply," pertains more to the expansion of one's own mind and consciousness than to bringing forth children in the outer world. And when the physical and its relationship to the spiritual as portrayed in the allegorical pattern of heaven and earth within the holographic cosmology of mind is understood, in conjunction with the spiritual meaning of the final temple is perceived in its true spiritual meaning as the fulfillment of the law and the commandment that we cannot atone for our shortcomings by sacrificing animals, but we can sacrifice our inner animals or hormones, our lusts, our desires, our beastly compulsions. We cannot find GD in Jerusalem. We must find him in us. Quote from At the Final Temple is the fulfillment of the commandment in Genesis 1:28-2. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And the whole account of the building of the temple is in reality an allegorical portrayal of the spiritual transformation of self as required by Paul in the words, "Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature," call 3, 5 NIV. And what are the elements of mind and being of man's lower earthly nature that must be put to death? To the above commandment, Paul states to abstain from sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Call 3, 5 to 10 NIV. Indicating that if you express the lower animal appetites of the physical in a carnal manner, that is, our hormones, our lusts, our desires, our beastly compulsions, "For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live." Rom 8:13 KJV. Overview. With respect to the cosmology of mind and the end times and predictions of a coming Armageddon, when these predictions are properly understood, what they portray is, "All this is but the beginning of the birth pangs." Matt 24, 8 RSV. See Armageddon Lost, the process of becoming born again. And how can this next stage of birth be brought about and achieved? Again, returning to Genesis and the reality of mind and spirit as found in the words, God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Gen 1:27 KJV. Fortunately, while many important spiritual teachings that the secular church under pagan Rome did not understand and agree with were removed, but this most important teaching on the coming of the kingdom within the mind and being of the disciple has been preserved in the second epistle of Clement, where it is stated, "Let us expect, therefore, hour by hour, the kingdom of God in love and righteousness, since we know not the day of the appearing of God." For the Lord himself, being asked by one when his kingdom would come, replied, "When two shall be one, that which is without as that which is within, and the male with the female, neither male nor female. How can the male with the female be neither male nor female?" The answer, when the two become one flesh, within a spiritual divine marriage which holographically merges the male linear of the husband with the feminine intuitive of the wife, into a spiritual embryo in the pattern of the physical embryo that becomes a fetus, see the holographic pattern of sex. This interaction between man and woman has the ability to develop the feminine intuitive within the mind and being of the man, which in turn is the environment through which he can begin to seek wholeness, and it is this necessary wholeness that is portrayed in the words, "And Jesus answering said unto them, They that are whole have no need of a physician, but they that are sick." Luke 5:32. Overview. Jesus' statement that unless you turn about and become as a little child that you can never enter the kingdom has perpetually confused the vast majority of Christians. Yet, the relationship of the child to the above words that the kingdom can only come when two shall be one, that which is without as that which is within, and the male with the female, neither male nor female, is further clarified in the 22 end saying in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus saw infants being suckled. He said to his disciples, "These infants being suckled are like those who enter the kingdom." They said to him, "Shall we then, as children, enter the kingdom?" Jesus said to them, "When you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, and when you fashion eyes in the place of an eye, and a hand in place of a hand, and a foot in place of a foot, and a likeness in place of a likeness, then will you enter the kingdom." The reality of how and when the kingdom will come within the mind and being of the disciple in relation to the above statement that the seeker must reform what is portrayed in Adam and Eve within oneself into one that is, "When you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, only then can the true meaning of the scriptures as portrayed by the pre-Nicene church father Origen be understood when he wrote in De Principis. But all the narrative portion, relating either to the marriages, or to the begetting of the children, or to battles of different kinds, or to any other histories whatever, what else can they be supposed to be, save the forms and figures of hidden and sacred things? Thus, the scriptures do not make reference to historical men and women, their marriages, the begetting of children, wars and conflicts, or, for that matter, to any other histories whatever, because what appears to be historical accounts are in reality allegorical portrayals of the laws, forces and realities of the seeker/disciple's own mind and being. And once again, and most importantly in the merger of the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female. Overview. Marriage, the warning of the apostle, the key of knowledge, if it is true as presented and explored in the above, that without the merger of what is portrayed as the male and the female into one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, then the reality is that without understanding the true depth and potential of the relationship of male and female on a physical, mental and spiritual level of mind and being, no real progress can be made by the seeker/disciple. And this includes not only the reason for the sexual prohibitions throughout the scriptures, but just as important is the relationship of the physical with the uniting within the mind of man, those spheres associated with the male and female that Jesus stated must be brought into oneness. So that the male not be male nor the female female, in conjunction with the seeker/disciple's own birth in the kingdom. And without this essential knowledge, neither the reality of the true meaning of the scriptures, nor of the life that each person is living, will be understood, and will remain an incomprehensible enigma. If it is true that there are higher realities of being that are totally inconceivable to the mind of the undeveloped faith-based believer, see mysteries of the gospel, and by virtue of their immaturity, the biblical authors were powerless to explain in detail many of the important gospel teachings and concepts than the spiritually mature authors of the scriptures who do know of these higher realities, remain virtually powerless to do anything more than to provide the people with a list of do's and don'ts, so that the immature Christians will be in a position where they are then better able to evolve to a mature understanding and comprehension of the teachings of Jesus and the way. To totally ignore these do's and don'ts, without knowing the consequence of one's choices and actions, is paramount to walking out onto a freeway blindfolded. Overview. I always found it truly amazing that students of the scriptures could read the words of Paul where he states that the mind of the Christians who he had himself taught would reject the truths pertaining to the higher reality of the soul and the mysteries of the kingdom as utter foolishness, portraying himself as an ambassador in bonds who was unable to speak plainly, and yet the implications of these words when read by the majority of readers remain ignored to their own detriment. Further, from this perspective, the best that Paul could do for those who he portrayed as entry-level Christians who were babes in Christ was to provide them a series of do's and don'ts that would assist them in evolving through the stages of spiritual immaturity that made it impossible for them to comprehend the true gospel meaning and objectives. Overview. There are two ultra-important possibilities that must be considered, that is, the position at least in cultural practice has been advanced by Bishop John Shelby Spong, whose side has been portrayed as such, although he admits that the Bible is full of statements about sexual virtue, including prohibitions against premarital sex, adultery, and homosexuality. The authors of the Bible were hopelessly uninformed, lacking the benefits of modern research. One author in particular, the Apostle Paul, may have been driven by an inner struggle with his sexual identity. See Rescuing the Bible. And the other side that Bishop Spong remains totally ignorant of is the fact that the biblical authors were not only well informed as to the reason why the scriptures condemned the cultural immorality of the modern practice of sexually hooking up outside of marriage, but that the facts could not be adequately explained because of the very reasons why Paul warned that the natural, organic mind of man was too immature to comprehend the higher reality of the soul and man's ultimate spiritual reality, which he must discover and manifest within his own life as he seeks to bring about the next stage of birth. Overview. I use Bishop Spong as an example of man's modern cultural folly because I have in the past communicated directly with him. See reply to Bishop Spong. I also replied and communicated directly with Bishop Gene Robinson's office on his claim that the condemnation of homosexuality by Paul was based upon a prohibition of heterosexuals from engaging in same-sex acts, and not homosexuals. See reply. Same-sex acts unnatural for heterosexuals, with Bishop Robinson making the profoundly ignorant statement that it never occurred to anyone in ancient times that a certain minority of us would be born being affectionately oriented to people of the same sex. And as revealed in my reply to Bishop Robinson, what we are witnessing in the hostility to the position presented in the scriptures is the result of error begetting even greater error, and the fact that if you perpetually repeat a lie, that it will come to be accepted as factually true. The gospel teaches that the kingdom must come within the body and mind of the individual disciple through the process of bringing about the next stage of birth through the merger of the male/female spheres of mind within the believer, and the spiritual transformation is portrayed as that. A child who builds within themselves the final temple which permits the seeker/disciple to be born in the inner kingdom, and that in the application of the key of knowledge in the life of the seeker/disciple, the physical embodiment of man and woman is merely an extension of the holographic image of male and female spheres of mind which have been allegorically impressed into the forms of nature. Therefore, the position of Bishop Robinson that it never occurred to anyone in ancient times that a certain minority of us would be born being affectionately oriented to people of the same sex, and the position of Bishop Spong that the authors of the Bible were hopelessly uninformed, lacking the benefits of modern research, reveals that nothing could be further from the truth. And this fact is demonstrated conclusively at the holographic pattern of sex. Overview. The fact that the biblical authors succeeded in bringing about that condition of mind and being where the male and the female had to become merged into one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, and that this merger and transformation of mind and being provided the biblical authors the spiritual insight gained via an anointed and enlightened access to a higher source of wisdom and knowledge that remains beyond the reach of natural man in his organic physical condition of mind means that the cultural position of Bishops Spong and Robinson is not only gravely flawed, but can be portrayed as a sentence of death to those who embrace it. But just as important is the fact that the idea that the sexual interaction of man and woman is only to propagate the species is just as gravely flawed as that of Spong and Robinson, who promote same-sex unions and gender neutrality. Overview. Reality is, Jesus portrayed this world as the outer darkness of mind and being, but few students of the Bible even understand the reality that is being portrayed. In the foregoing subheading entitled "Why Is It Important to Understand the Inner Spiritual Meaning of the Scriptures?", I portray this world as a mental womb that is representative of the necessary environment to bring about the expansion and development of mind. And in the same way that a fetus dwells in the darkness of its mother's womb, not being able to perceive beyond the limitations of that initial womb of development, what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being is merely the reality of the next womb that mankind is born blind to the higher reality of, and is unable to perceive beyond its physical limitations, without bringing about the next stage of birth, that is. Jesus answered him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." John 3:3. Overview. In a parallel analogy, Plato portrayed this world as a cave of illusions. See Plato's Cave. Unless you begin to understand why Jesus portrayed organic man as being blind to his own higher soul and spiritual reality, and why Plato portrayed everything that you think you see as illusion, then you will remain perpetually lost and mentally shackled and impaired. Until it is understood that what man observes in the outer world is merely a blueprint of mind that is projected into both the forms of nature as well as the pattern of the whole, which is holographically replicated into the cosmology of mind within each person, no real progress towards escaping these conditions of mental impairment can be achieved. Further, to ignore the gospel declaration that Jesus taught those who were portrayed as in the house, totally different than those who are portrayed as being without or on the outside, means that such a person has shackled themselves within a self-imposed prison of absolute ignorance. And while this is of the utmost importance on a number of levels that organic man has not even yet considered, one such reality is seen in the fact that the same relationship exists with respect to our own source as being constituted in the etheric field which surrounds the physical body vessel, which means that the physical body that we do see and observe with our earthly senses is in fact a projection of the source which remains beyond our physical vision and ability to detect. Overview. Further, the objectives of the authors of the Gospels is to seek the truths in the underlying, etheric, field of the seeker/disciple, and the true meaning of the scriptures, when decoded with the proper application of the key of knowledge, was and remains the revelation of the necessary knowledge with respect to the forces and laws that are active in the unseen, etheric, field of one's own mind and being presented to the seeker/disciple in what is called the allegorical language of the soul, and that the same allegorical symbolism is exactly the same as the allegorical symbolism that is used by the author of nature, who embedded the language of the soul into the forms of nature in the outer world. And this is in fact the reason why the Church Father Origen stated, with respect to the application of the key of knowledge to both the scriptures and all of organic forms of nature, that it is sufficient, however, to represent in the style of a historic narrative what is intended to convey a secret meaning in the garb of history, that those who have the capacity may work out for themselves all that relates to the subject. The key phrase here is seen in the words, that those who have the capacity may work out for themselves all that relates to the subject, which indicates that men and women of true intellect that are free from the restraints of both the laws and the carnal limitations of man's cultures and doctrines of belief have the ability to crack the code of not only the scriptures, but of creation itself, by applying the rules of the key of knowledge. The literal text of the Gospels, and especially the Sermon on the Mount, represent those teachings which prepare the seeker/disciple to break free of the restraints of the laws, which constrain the mind, and enable the seeker/disciple to begin to have the capacity to work out for themselves the true meaning of both the scriptures and the life they are presently living. Overview. The heightening and expansion of mind. If I pose the question, do you know the purpose and objectives of the original teachings of Jesus and the Way? An important insight into the very essence, purpose, and higher spiritual objectives of the original teachings of the Way is contained in an article in the Encyclopedia Britannica under the heading, "The History of Christian Mysticism," where it reads, "Although the essence of mysticism is the sense of contact with the transcendent, mysticism and the history of Christianity should not be understood merely in terms of special ecstatic experiences, but as part of a religious process lived out within the context of the Christian community. From this perspective, mysticism played a vital part in the early church. Early Christianity was a religion of the spirit that expressed itself in the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness. What is expressed in these words is of the utmost importance. Why? Because the original teachings of Jesus was not the blind faith and belief in a prophet or God-man, but rather, the means to transform all Christian disciples of the way into prophets and mystics, as demonstrated in the words. From this perspective, mysticism played a vital part in the early church. Early Christianity was a religion of the spirit that expressed itself in the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness. But we must then pose the question, just what is a religion of the spirit? Like an astronaut who travels beyond the limits of the Earth's atmosphere into outer space. A spiritual religion prepares the seeker/disciple to transcend the barrier of this physical world and enter into what the biblical authors portrayed as the kingdom of God, which Jesus taught was within us. But to accomplish this spiritual transcendence, you had to first prepare the physical body to make it an environment that would permit the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness to be brought about, and this requires a great amount of effort and preparation. And in the same way that charlatans peddle get-rich schemes which rob the people of their wealth and prosperity, wolves and sheep's attire peddled shortcut schemes, and it was these counterfeit shepherds who seduced the naive into handing over their money and support so they could live lucratively off the collection plate. Overview. The spiritual Christians who followed in the way and prepared themselves to transcend the natural physical limitations of the body possessed the divine knowledge of the kingdom which they had succeeded in entering. And the spiritual Christians were opposed by those who portrayed themselves as orthodox, who more often than not were charlatans, who for the sake of mammon and the political power of this world, ardently opposed the spiritual Christians because they represented a direct threat to their base of money and political power. Overview. Intuitive mind vs. linear rational. The question can be rightfully asked. If the above is true, then why can't mystics and enlightened spiritual men speak plainly? Instead of using the enigma of allegorical scriptures, the answer can only be understood as the seeker/disciple begins to fulfill the ancient adage to know thyself. And when the cosmology of mind is rightly understood, the truth and the reality of self that the disciple seeks already exists within them. And thus, what we are presented with are a number of paradoxes that have confronted man since he first stepped foot on the earth. Thus, these proverbial questions must be confronted. Is the mind of a child empty? Or does a great source of knowledge already exist within the mind of the child that must be tapped into? Do you instruct a child through rote programming in the manner of our educational systems today? Or do you guide the child into an environment of self-discovery? Mystics have long warned mankind that the reality of this world of appearances is not at all what it seems to be through the perception of man's physical eyes and senses, that is. That there is a great deal more that man's senses and perception cannot detect or even imagine. And this same enigma of the limits of man's physical senses was noted by Albert Einstein, who concluded with respect to man's dilemma when he stated, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. In view of the fact that our culture neither understands the intuitive spheres of mind, neither do they understand the source of knowledge that the intuitive spheres of mind has the potential to tap into, mankind has for all intent and purposes shackled himself to a condition of profound self-imposed ignorance with respect to a higher reality that he does not at all understand. And what the mystic has long warned mankind is that because of the shackles imposed upon mankind by his traditional religious, philosophical, cultural and educational institutions, which have created a society that honors the rational servant and has forgotten and suppressed the development of the intuitive gift, thus blinding mankind to the underlying cause of all that man sees and experiences in this world, man remains perpetually lost and blind in what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness, or what the philosopher portrayed in the analogy of the illusions of Plato's cave, see cave. Overview. That the whole of our culture is based exclusively upon the very limited vision of the linear rational mind, which strives to overpower and inhibit the development of the intuitive gift, is why the Apostle Paul warned, "See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world." Call 2, 8 NIV. Thus, where the biblical authors portray what they call the testimony of Christ as the entry-level language of allegorical symbols that are intended to act as a catalyst in the beginning development of the entry-level believing Christian. The objective is to bring about the necessary maturity and transformation in the development of the latent intuitive spheres of mind that enables the seeker/disciple of the way to fulfill the higher spiritual objectives of the gospel as presented in the above words of the Britannica. Although the essence of mysticism is the sense of contact with the transcendent, mysticism and the history of Christianity should not be understood merely in terms of special ecstatic experiences, but as part of a religious process lived out within the context of the Christian community. From this perspective, mysticism played a vital part in the early church. Early Christianity was a religion of the spirit that expressed itself in the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness. That this spiritual objective and body of esoteric teachings became lost when the church came under the dominion of pagan Rome, which was the primary reason why our constitutional framers inhibited the government from interfering in the practice of religion, means that the spiritual objective of the practice of religion is in the development of the seeker/disciple to utilize those higher intuitive areas of the mind that is able to connect with the inner transcendent, that is, contact with the transcendent, that was, part of a religious process lived out within the context of the Christian community. From this perspective, mysticism played a vital part in the early church. Early Christianity was a religion of the spirit that expressed itself in the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness, which means that the true objective of the teachings of Jesus and the way is the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness through the development of the intuitive centers of the mind, which Einstein correctly portrays as a sacred gift. Overview. The very fact that it was the objective of the original teachings associated with the historical man Jesus known as the way to bring about this condition of enlightenment about in the life of the individual Christian believer means that there exists the means to bring this enlightened reality of mind about, which means that the question then becomes not if but rather how to bring this heightening and enlargement of human consciousness about in the life of the believer as he progresses down the path of the way? Certainly not through the further development of the mind through the linear rational servant. In the picture at the right, the frontispiece to her translation of Newton, Millie Duchdelet appears as Voltaire's muse, reflecting Newton's heavenly insights down to Voltaire. See Voltaire. What is personified in the term muse is always representative of a feminine source of wisdom and is very much an allegorical personification of the intuitive aspects of one's own mind that provides insight and access to the higher source of knowledge and wisdom within oneself. In the image of the three muses at the left, in Greek writings, these would be representative of the personification of the intuitive aspects of mind, which must be developed in order to begin to tap into and access man's inner source of mind and being. And in this respect, such biblical figures as Mary Magdalene is not the personification of an historical person, but rather the purification, development, and raising up of the feminine, intuitive aspects of the disciple's own mind. In the Gospels associated with Mary Magdalene, it is written, she speaks to the other disciples about Jesus and what she's seen. And Peter says, I don't believe the Lord said these things. These are certainly strange ideas. And she says, well, do you think I made them up? Do you think I'm lying about the Lord? In this allegorical representation, the linear rational aspect of mind is represented in Peter's inability to comprehend what the feminine intuitive as represented in the allegorical personification of Mary Magdalene reveals. And since these intuitive visions, impressions and wisdom does not support the linear reasoning of the masculine vision of this world and creation, in most people, they are rejected. Overview. In the introduction to the book Secrets of Mary Magdalene, Prof. Elaine Pagels writes and quotes the Gospel of Philip. Simultaneously, the Gospel of Philip celebrates Mary Magdalene as manifesting the divine spirit, which this gospel calls the virgin who came down from heaven. When Christians spoke of Jesus born from a virgin, this author agrees but refuses to take it literally. So some people, he says, take this literally to mean that Jesus' mother became pregnant apart from any man, apart from sexual intercourse. But this, he says, is the faith of fools who fail to comprehend spiritual matters. Although, as we note, it can be seen in the birth narratives offered in the New Testament Gospels of Matthew and Luke. Instead, continues the Gospel of Philip, Jesus was born physically, just as all humans, as the son of biological parents. The difference, says the author of this gospel, that he was also born again in baptism, born spiritually to become the son of the Father above, and of the Heavenly Mother, the Holy Spirit, that one of the primary objectives of this life is to bring about and achieve the next stage of birth, a non-physical birth, which is allegorically portrayed as a virgin birth, should be of primary importance to all people. Overview. In the same way that Peter, as representing the male, linear rational spheres of mind, states of the intuitive visions and wisdom of Mary Magdalene, these are certainly strange ideas. It is a fact that it is the lopsided development of what Einstein portrayed as the linear rational servant that inhibits the development of the intuitive gift that is. As seen in Einstein's statement that the only thing that interferes with my learning is my education. Without the balanced development of the intuitive, the linear rational, which only senses outwardly, arrives as a point where it becomes what can be portrayed as flatlined, which in turn inhibits the further development of the linear rational servant from itself maturing beyond organic limitations. And herein lies the great obstacle to human development that linear intellectuals don't at all understand, that is the reality that the linear programming of the mind, which is the agenda of our educational systems, including the reading of books and traditional study, only serves to inhibit the development of the intuitive spheres of mind. And it is the lack of balance between the inward-looking intuitive and the outward-looking linear rational that inhibits the development of the mind beyond a certain very shallow organic physical level of maturity.